It's always a blessing to come with God's people. And for those listening online, we trust that you'll be encouraged by the word of God tonight. We're talking about tragic ends and faithful friends. I've renamed this, though, to When the Screen Goes Black. We're starting with the 23rd Psalm. The Lord is my shepherd, I lack nothing. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside still waters. He refreshes my soul. And we'll stop there because you can say the rest of it by heart, I am sure. And we love this psalm. This is David at his purest and his best, his finest. And we run to this psalm when we need comfort and hope. But we're not going to this psalm tonight. We're not going to the 23rd. We're going to the 63rd. And we're going to see another side of the psalmist. Not the slingshot slinger or the sweet shepherd singer. Not the darling of the palace, but a hunted man on the run. Psalm 63 takes us to a different place, a different time, and a different tone. We see David at his lowest, wounded, wandering, disappointed, discouraged, defeated, disillusioned, a place where none of us want to be. David had just escaped another of Saul's attempts to kill him. And this time, David had an opportunity to kill Saul, but he couldn't do it. No matter how evil Saul was, he was still the king, God's anointed. And David spared his life and listened to another of Saul's fake promises. But now David had had enough. He couldn't trust Saul. David hit the bottom, and he didn't consult God this time. He made a decision. And like Peter after the crucifixion when he said, I go fishing. There's nothing more here for me. He was ready to leave it all behind. The palace, the place of worship, the tabernacle, the promise of the throne. David had entered the dark night of the soul. And in 1 Samuel 27:1, David said in his heart, now I shall perish someday by the hand of Saul. There is nothing better for me than that I should speedily escape to the land of the Philistines. And Saul will despair of me to seek me anymore in any part of Israel. So I shall escape out of his hand. Then David arose and went over with the 600 men who were with him to Achish, the son of Maok, king of Gath. So David dwelt with Achish. I practiced all day trying to say that. At Gath. He and his men, each man with his household, and David with his two wives, Ahinoam the Jezreelitess, and Abigail the Carmelitess, Nabal's widow. And it was told Saul that David had fled to Gath, so he sought him no more. Where have we heard of Gath before? It was the hometown of Goliath, the capital of the Philistines, just over the border from Israel. And it was still under the control of the Philistines. It had not yet been conquered. And David felt he'd be safe there since Saul didn't want to tangle with the Philistines there. Saul had spies everywhere searching for David. And David felt safer with the enemies than with his own people. And he turned to the pagan king for refuge. Have you ever heard anybody say, sometimes non-Christians treat you better than Christians do? David managed to convince this king of his loyalty. And it was deception, but it worked for a year and 4 months. David raided nomadic tribes in the desert and brought Achish the spoils. And in return, Achish gave David the town of Ziklag for his base of operations. So David and his 600 men and their families settled there. And David made sure that no one survived his raids to take any reports back to Achish. He left no one alive. He took all the animals and possessions, gave the king a very sketchy report, and Achish believed him. He even made David his personal bodyguard. But David paid a price spiritually for this decision and this lifestyle. The prelude to Psalm 63 pinpoints David's location, a psalm of David when he was in the desert of Judah. I think we have a picture of the desert of Judah there somewhere, okay? 63 says, O God, you are my God. Early will I seek you. My soul thirsts for you. My flesh longs for you in a dry and thirsty land where there is no water. And that's how it begins. O God, you are my God. Now, we can't skip lightly over the anguish in David's heart and rush to the rejoicing. He was hurt by his leader, hunted by his kinsmen, and feeling forsaken by God. But although he had chosen to live with the enemy, surrounded by their gods, he made one thing clear at the beginning of this psalm. O Elohim, you are my God. David drew a line in the sand. I'll live among the Philistines and I'll serve their king, but I will not worship their gods. And then he vows, early will I seek you. David was not only in a physical wilderness, he was in a spiritual one. And his search for God indicates something had been lost. God is distant. It is night. And you can't find anything in the dark. Willard Hernandez, in his book, Henry Nouwen, A Spirituality of Imperfection, writes this. It is true that even for Christians, there always exists the possibility that their relationship with God can be shaken, lessened, or interrupted for various reasons, including God withdrawing the sense of his presence. But David vows to seek God when the morning comes. And the Hebrew word for morning or early literally means to dawn. The early part of the day, get to your task. Early will I seek you points to the dawning of a new day. But it's not morning yet. Look at David's despair. What put David in this flight pattern? And why did he end up in the wilderness? We have to go back to Saul's palace. It all happened in the king's house. One night he was sitting at the king's table, ate the king's food, was loved, treated like a son, sheltered in the castle, respected, praised for his accomplishments, enjoying fellowship with his friend Jonathan. He was the king's son-in-law, and there was joy and feasting and the music of the harp. And then jealousy erupted, and a spear went flying past his head. His benefactor became his enemy. The king's house was no longer a safe place. What have I done? David cries. I faithfully served the king, and now he hunts me like a wild animal. Can you put yourself in David's place? You've been faithfully serving the Lord. You've been a servant in the king's house, the church. You have paid your tithes and sung on the worship team. You have given your best, and then someone starts a rumor, and accusations begin to fly. Favor turns to suspicion, rebuke, isolation, abuse. The king's house, the church, is no longer a safe place. When any prominent church leader fails or is accused of some abuse, we rush to protect the ministry. The victims are often silenced, but their pain does not go away. They carry it with them as they sit silently on the back pew or when they leave the fellowship permanently, giving up on God and the church. Church wounds are the deepest. The feeling of being out of touch with God is bad enough. And then Christians deliver secondary wounds, adding to the trauma. In her sermon a few weeks ago, The Walking Wounded, Pastor Dana told of the time she was in the hospital writhing in pain. Then her church friends came and told her, if you had more faith, you wouldn't be here. Talk about Job's comforters. And yet, those going through a dark time often hear rebukes and accusations just like this. Pastor Dana weathered it, but many do not. The wilderness is a place of questioning and anger. Why did this happen, and where is God? And there are no easy answers, and the sufferer doesn't want to hear them anyway. The term dark night of the soul was used by St. John of the Cross, a Spanish Catholic priest in the 1500s. He saw this experience as a purging of the soul, intended by God to bring a spiritual awakening and a new birth. The term has come to refer to any time we hit rough spots and begin to doubt God's goodness. People may enter the wilderness in a number of ways, in addition to church trauma and hurt. It can be through any major loss or tragic circumstance, the death of a loved one, a life-altering illness, a car accident, a lost career, a betrayal. C.S. Lewis entered the dark night of the soul through grief when his wife, Joy, died with cancer. He questioned how God could let this happen. And Lewis began to think that God was merely fiction. He came to the edge of renouncing his faith, but something pulled him back and restored his trust in God. During this time of darkness, the believer's world is turned upside down. There's mental confusion, sleepless nights, depression, fear, a sense of the loss of identity. There are physical as well as spiritual and emotional issues, and God seems far away. Most of us have had these moments at some point, and we want to forget them. And when our answers come and faith is restored, we want to move on. We don't have a lot of patience for the people who are still struggling. I made it through. They can too. But for some, the despair is too deep. They give up and die in the desert. David's world has been shaken and everything had changed, and he was forced to run for his life. And in the desert, he had to deal with his emotional and spiritual pain. What does it feel like in the dark night of the soul? Let's go back to verse 1. My soul thirsts for you, my flesh longs for you in a dry and thirsty land where there is no water. When hope dies, nothing satisfies. The thirst is so deep, nothing can fill it. The body, the flesh, is affected by the spirit's emptiness. You can't sleep. Your mind is tormented. It's barren and dry. Nothing is growing in the desert, and there's no water. Life has gone out of the sermons and the songs. Church services give no consolation. The inner pain and ache from the past trauma won't go away. And what I believed no longer works. It's hard to believe this is the same David who sang about still waters and green pastures. Now it's a dry desert, no water, a despair. There's a little Hebrew note that I found. There are only two tenses in biblical Hebrew, the past tense and the future tense. And in the past tense, the action is completed. And of course, in the future or imperfect tense, the action is incomplete. And these are two tenses to look for in Psalm 63. Memories can be a good thing. David remembered the sanctuary in verse 2. I have seen you in the sanctuary and beheld your power and glory. Notice, I have. This is past tense. He's left the land of the tabernacle. He was out of church. And what did he miss? What did he yearn to see? Not the sacrifices, not the priest's flashy robes, not the chanting, not the trappings of religion. He wanted to see the power and the glory of God. And when people are in spiritual dryness, they're hungry for more than a religious program. What they're really thirsting for is an experience with the living God, his power to work miracles they desperately need, and the glorious radiance of his divine presence. We can do our best, but our best will not meet the need. Only God's best can penetrate the darkness and the fog they're living in. Only God's reality can stop the lies that they've been fed. In verse 3, he remembers God's goodness and love. And he says, because your loving kindness is better than life. And then he remembered God at night when he couldn't sleep and how God had helped him and had been his defense. Verses 6 and 7, when I remember you on my bed, I meditate on you in the night watches because you have been my help. How do you know when you're in the wilderness? Well, Stephen Wimes in his book, Whole, W-H-O-L-E, Restoring What Is Broken in Me, You, and the Entire World, he says, the wilderness is where you are when nothing seems to be working and you're not sure how to fix it. Suppose you are typing away on your computer, working on a last-minute project, and the deadline is near. You're almost finished, and then the screen goes black, and the computer shuts off, and you don't know how to fix it. Your entire work may be lost. How do you feel? Panic. And what do? Text the tech. In my case, it's my son-in-law, Seth Lampman, who will always tell me to reboot. But when the spiritual screen goes black and there's nothing there, and your faith is on the edge of extinction, there may not be an instant deliverance. David was 1 year and 4 months away from the sanctuary. This season may last months or longer because it's a reboot of your whole life. Sam Robbins, in an article titled Walking Through My Dark Night of the Soul, shares his experience. God stopped making sense. My spiritual practices stopped working, or at least it felt that way. I couldn't believe a word of the Bible. I knew I should pray, but approaching God felt terrifying. As I listened to sermons, I would hear an inner voice arguing with everything said. I had gone to church all my life, so I'd been through spiritual highs and lows before, but this was a new experience. Previously, it felt possible to be encouraged by the right answers to my doubts, but now these responses were hollow and flat. God was gone. In this experience, Sam was looking for someone to blame for certain issues in his life. It was either God or himself. And it took 10 months to work through this dark place and to find God in it. But eventually he did. He came out of the darkness a different person, more aware of God's love. And that is the ideal outcome. It's not always that way. So how do you help someone in the dark night? When someone you know is struggling, just stand out and let God do his work. Don't try to fix it. There has to be a personal encounter. You can only listen, love, and pray. The wounded may not trust the organized church, especially if the trauma happened there. They may need professional help. So what can we do? I found this in an article put out by Dallas Theological Seminary. How to help someone in the dark night of the soul. Number one, avoid platitudes. Don't give them the easy answers. Don't give them your Christian cliches. Explore alternative ways to do church. Small groups may be better than church services. Encourage different practices from the usual. Silence, solitude, and a silent retreat may work better. Recommend a spiritual director, one who listens without judgment and just prays over them. Embrace lamentations together. Weep with those who weep. And recommend new authors. There are some helpful books out there. What did David do when his screen went black? This was his stance. I will. I will is in the future tense. He's not there yet. He knows how to worship God, but it's not working now. David has suffered trauma and severe losses, but he didn't lose his faith in God. He believed his song would return. He would rejoice. His destiny would be fulfilled. He didn't know how far in the future, but he hung on to hope. Future could be 5 minutes from now or 5 years from now. I will doesn't necessarily mean that it happened immediately. I don't see him dancing in the wilderness. And if you have that, you know, we've got that idea, oh, David had victory in the wilderness. We don't know that. This is future tense. Think about it. In verses 3 to 7, he writes, because your loving kindness is better than life, my lips shall praise you. I will bless you. I will lift up my hands in your name. My soul will be satisfied, and my mouth will praise you with joyful lips. And on my bed, when I remember you in the shadow of your wings, I will rejoice. It's all future tense. Verse 8, this is something else that he did. My soul follows hard after you. I like the NIV where it says, I cling to you. Your right hand upholds me. Here's some examples of clinging. Jacob, when he wrestled with the angel, said, I won't let you go till you bless me. Clinging. Job, after his children died, his possessions are stolen. He says, though you slay me, yet will I trust in you. He was clinging. And Peter, when Jesus said, are you going to go away too? He said, where can we go? You alone have the words of eternal life. He was clinging. What about Saul? What's going on there? Well, God can take care of your enemies. Saul was on a witch hunt, a real one. When you push God aside, you're open to every form of evil. Saul wanted answers about the coming battle with the Philistines, but God had canceled him. There was no word from God. There is a prophetic word in Psalm 63, however, verses 9 and 10. David's writing, but those who seek my life to destroy it shall go into the lower parts of the earth. They shall fall by the sword. They shall be a portion for jackals. The lower parts of the earth refers to the underworld of the dead. A prediction of Saul's death, but it could also refer to Saul going to the underworld to contact Samuel's spirit. And this was fulfilled when Saul called the witch to raise Samuel. And because Saul was rejected by God, he couldn't get answers from God. He had to go. the way of witchcraft. And then David said, they shall fall by the sword. This psalm even predicts the form of death. And when Samuel came up from the dead, when the witch brought him up, he didn't bring any comfort to Saul. His word was, moreover, the Lord will deliver Israel with you into the hand of the Philistines. And tomorrow you and your sons will be with me. And the Lord will also deliver the army of Israel into the hands of the Philistines. So Samuel's words coincide with the prophecy in Psalm 63. And they were fulfilled. And then there's a line, they shall be a portion for jackals. The jackals were scavengers. And they had access to the bodies that were scattered on the battlefield. The Philistines gave no honor to the fallen, no honorable burial. And the next day, the Philistines gathered for battle. David and his men reported for duty. They were going to support Achish. But the Philistine captains didn't trust David, refused to let him fight with them. So David took his 600 men, went back to Ziklag. Remember what we said earlier? Sometimes people in the world treat you better than Christians do. Well, if you think Christians are bad, wait till you encounter the world. And we read what David encountered, 1 Samuel 30, the first six verses. David and his men reached Ziklag on the third day. Now the Amalekites had raided the Negev and Ziklag. They had attacked Ziklag and burned it and taken captive the women and everyone else in it, both young and old. They killed none of them but carried them off as they went on their way. That's what David found when he got home. When David and his men reached Ziklag, they found it destroyed by fire, their wives, sons, and daughters taken captive. So David and his men wept aloud until they had no more strength left to weep. And David's two wives had been captured, and David was greatly distressed because the men were talking of stoning him. Each one was bitter in spirit because of his sons and daughters, but David found strength in the Lord his God. This time, David sought the Lord for guidance. God told him to go after the Amalekites and that he would recover all. And that's exactly what happened. Now, Saul's body, what happened to that? The families of David and his men had been restored and their goods recaptured. But Saul lost the war with the Philistines. And the Philistines found Saul's body. They decapitated him, like David had done with Goliath. And they hung his remains on the city wall to further disgrace and embarrass Israel. But even in the midst of this grisly outcome, a group of heroes emerged. They remembered how Saul had rescued them from the Ammonites 40 years before. And they risked their lives to repay the kindness and show respect to their deceased king. And we read about that in 1 Samuel 31, 11 to 13. Now when the inhabitants of Jabesh-Gilead heard what the Philistines had done to Saul, all the valiant men arose and traveled all night and took the body of Saul and the bodies of his sons from the wall of Beth-shan. They came to Jabesh and burned them there. Then they took their bones and buried them under the tamarisk tree in Jabesh and fasted 7 days. How did this psalm end? In verse 11, it says, but. That's always God's going to do something. But the king shall rejoice in God. Everyone who swears by him shall glory. But the mouth of those who speak lies shall be stopped. David now had a firmer grip on the truth of who God was and of who he was. He was anointed to be king. And everyone who would swear allegiance to him and to his God would rejoice. And those who spread slander and lies would be silenced. Only truth and righteousness would reign, and the dark night would end. Now David had a nation to lead, but he knew he needed God, but he was following hard. Remember, following close after God. And he knew God was holding him and had been holding him, even in the desert experience. Eugene Peterson, in his book, A Long Obedience in the Same Direction, writes, all the persons of faith I know are sinners, doubters, uneven performers. We are secure not because we are sure of ourselves, but because we trust that God is sure of us. Neither our feelings of depression, nor the facts of suffering, nor the possibilities of defection are evidence that God has abandoned us. The dark night is a refining process, a reorientation, a rebooting, of your beliefs about God and yourself. So maybe things are going great right now, and we're bouncing along with only minor trials, the usual everyday pains. But we don't know what will happen tomorrow. Tragedy could come to your family. Bombs could fall on our naval bases. What if an enemy, seen or unseen, seeks our destruction? Think of the hostages in Gaza. The institutions we believe in may fail. What if spiritual darkness descends on us in a way we've never known? What do we do? Number one, hold on to your memories of God's goodness. And number two, declare the I wills. I will bless you, Lord, while I live. I will lift up my hands in worship and prayer in your name. I will praise you. I will be satisfied with your provision. I will rejoice. I will cling to you. Cling to God like someone hanging on a cliff waiting to be rescued. Last week, Chuck read a prayer that I really believe it fits here. Father, we come alongside those who are struggling to stand under the weight of their circumstances or grief. We stake ourselves to brothers and sisters who may be struggling to believe or to walk in your peace. We wrap our arms of love around them, whether literally or figuratively, and declare over them, you will not fall. You will stand. You will not give up. You will persevere. You will not die. You will live and declare the works of the Lord. You will accomplish your destiny. And as we pray tonight, may I suggest a few prayer points. Pray for those going through spiritual pain from past hurts. Pray that we will have a genuine sensitivity to the hurting, not judgmental or bypassing their pain. Pray that the church will ever be a place of healing and not of hurt. And pray for wisdom for our leaders in finding ways to connect with those who are hurting. God bless you, and thank you for joining us online.